This is White Mountain Rescue Without a Trace, Part 13, the beginning of the end, as we are entering the final rescue, the mountain rescue, the culmination of the entire campaign up to this point. Before we get started with that, though, let's go through our standard kind of like beginning of session procedures, do a little bit of recap, and check on the current state of our first responders. Roderick Lops is currently still just marked by the chicken. Hank Jr. is around, is on the shelf, nice and prominently displayed there. Very nice. Truly, you can clear that condition at any point. As long as you have it marked, the chicken is there somehow. I don't know. I could just tell you to clear it, but I feel like that's one of those conditions. Just like, why not just keep it? You could maybe clear it at a dramatically impactful moment. Mike Waitley Hesters is obsessed with the mountain. Dallas Bartmoss is an agent of Prism, and Ellis, the White Mountain Hermit. Fogarty is disoriented and incoherent. So honestly, we have three permanent conditions amongst our four first responders. But other than that, like no other conditions aside from Roderick having just the one. So not a bad place to kick things off for the mountain rescue.
We are
As a
well-adjusted individuals.
yes, we are. I have my Prism background set. Just there it is. Because Prism is pretty prominent in this campaign now, so figured that we should have them play a part in the finale to come. As a bit of a recap, while my first responders go through their end of session questions and mark what they kind of want to tick off for the end of the session, we had resolved the previous rescue of the crashed chopper with the first responders rescuing the two National Forest employees from the hunting grounds of these otherworldly predator-like hunters. And in doing so, they had received their 15th and final mountain clue. In total, they had gotten three mountain clues over the course of that session, catapulting us to the finale. But we had learned, out of character, we'll have time for that in character, that Hank McBride is not actually dead. That instead, right before the explosion went off 3 months ago in the van he drove to sacrifice himself to save the town, at that instant, he was pulled through to the other side by this antlered figure, this mountain king, and then imprisoned all this time until he managed to contact Ellis, who heard him up through the like tunnels and like sewers beneath the fortress of Verdigris in that other dimension. And Ellis just promised that he'd see what he could do to help him out. So that is the current standing of the campaign. I have the mountain rescue ready to introduce and tell you all about the questions we're going to do. I'm handling it a bit different than one is typical in most CFB games, and two is actually like directly advised by White Mountain Rescue's text itself, for no other reason than I've just wanted to kind of make a very a standout, bespoke, complex final scenario for my first responders to solve. In the game as written, similar to games like Brindlewood Bay and Public Access and the Between, it's usually a single question scenario of just like, how can we stop the person or how do we save this person? I've decided to take inspiration from the Silt versus RPGs confrontation, which is a multiple couple of questions. That's gonna be more of kind of not like a heist, but it's gonna be more of like an infiltration, very difficult scenario. You guys are going to another dimension, essentially. So it's gonna reflect the difficulty. So with that in mind, I'd like to kick us off. Unless there are any questions or last points of clarification for my players before we begin. No. Alrighty then. Let us start then. We will begin with a dark pine mountain road as the headlights of a car cut through the misty evening, driving 90 on a 45 at high speed, tearing along this switchback that goes up the mountain. We don't see who's driving the car. We only see their shadow, their silhouette, and as we hear the roaring rev of the engine, their panicked, frantic breathing, muttering under his breath, "It's t there's no time. 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 There's no time." This car comes roaring up to a small little mom and pop convenience store gas station. By a little road sign that says Plymouth next exit. And the car skids slightly from the main road, and slowing down but still moving quite fast, crashes into a tree out near the front of this convenience store. There is an old man behind the counter inside, an old, maybe pushing 60, a little bald. Jumpers on, kind of looks a little bit like the gas station attendant from No Country for Old Men. And yeah, exactly. He comes stumbling out to see the commotion. The driver's side door of the car opens and a figure falls out of it, still mumbling, "There's no time. There's no time. There's no time. There's no time." And this man comes up and says, "Oh, Jesus Christ, sir, are you okay? What?" And he's going over to help him. Pips of this man, we just see that he has a coat on, a baseball cap. We still don't see who this man is. He's got, he looks disheveled and disoriented otherwise. And the store owner's like, "Well, come on, let's get you inside. Let's call for help. 911. Yeah, come on." And begins to, walk you in, walk this figure in. And, as we see them, on the phone calling, for help. This man had crashed his car. He seems disoriented. He doesn't seem drunk. He, just kind of going through the motions with this operator on the other side. And this entire time, we've just watched this man rocking back and forth, only visible from his back, just kind of like wringing his hands, clenching his knuckles, twitching every so often. And then the store owner eventually walks over to him and kneels down and says, "All right, son, I've called some folks. They're coming by to help. Is there anything I can get you? You need something to drink?" And the man, who now, as the camera pans around him, we see the haggard but still somewhat familiar features of Paul Foster, the missing camper from the very first rescue of the campaign, who looks like he hasn't slept in a very long time, dark bags under his eyes. And as he flicks up to look at the store owner in the eyes, we see from his vision, from his perspective, Silent Hill, style, like a patina of verdigris rust begins to like spread and cover the interior of the gas station. And then when it cuts away from his perspective, that's gone. And the man says again, "Son, are you all right? Did you hear me?" And Paul Foster looks up at him and says, "Do you know? Son, do I know what? Him. Him. Wotan. Karnonos. The Lord of the Hunt. The Antler King. You know him, don't you? He waits in the woods." And the store owner's expression changes very subtly. And he nods slowly and he says, "He watches in the water. He wills the world to warp, son. Time's almost at hand." And Paul Foster just nods and says, "I know. I know. Time's almost here. There's no time." And Paul Foster pulls out a gun and shoots the store owner in the head. Moments later, we cut to the police car rolling up, and Paul Foster is kneeling outside the gas station. And as the officers come rolling up, he just says, "My name is Paul Foster. I'd like to confess to a murder." Let me cut to black. This is where the intro, our True Detective style intro sequence would play,
Boom, bravo, boom, 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 bravo. Yes.
Yeah. That theme is awesome. I love that theme so much.
It's every song in that series is just
So fantastic. We cut away to let's begin with Mike Hester's, Mike Whateley Hester's, I should say. it has been, I'd say, a couple weeks since the affair with the crash chopper. How has your recovery gone so far? What is the current state of Mike that we find on this mid-spring day here in Plymouth? What is Mike getting up to?
I think Mike is outside his home for some reason digging holes, trying to find something. It's unclear what he's trying to find, but like he's like just sort of like desperately digging holes like with a shovel and whatnot. Like he hasn't gotten so bad that he needs to dig with his hands yet, but it's just like there's just a bunch of holes all around it, about like a foot deep into the earth, as though like he's looking for something, and then he remembers, oh, it's not actually here. Let's go someplace else.
Very good. Continue. Do you have more to share on that or no?
No.
Okay, very good. Very fun. I like that. Let's cut away to Roddy Lops. Same question for you ultimately. I just like you to kind of paint us the scene of Roderick's current life here in Plymouth after that previous scenario. Just kind of what is your character opening here?
He's almost never home now. Nowhere feels super safe. He's checked in on Mike, Dallas, if they let him. Ellis is off in the woods, probably, who knows? But right now he is actually feeding Hank Jr. some little bird seed, out behind the out Hey, buddy. Out behind the station, the ranger station, because that's like he's got a little house there, a little coop. He may have convinced David Embargo this may be contraband, but Hank Jr. is just so charming. It's hard to say no to him. So, and
Has
he's just
Hank
kind of
Jr.
talking.
become the station mascot? Is that what's happened here?
Yes.
Aww.
And absolutely, absolutely. And Roderick occasionally goes and talks to the chicken about things he's not really comfortable talking to other people about, mostly being concerned about his fellow Rangers and maybe the state of the world.
Indeed. Dallas Bartmoss, I would ask you to paint us a picture, but I will be painting you a picture first because we have to establish some very key details. As Wes and I have talked between sessions to kind of understand the scope of what is happening with Dallas's secret agenda and their work with Prism, we cut to a warehouse-like facility, concrete floors, metal support girders. Not entirely clear where this is in relation to everything else, but there are various uniformed employees walking about the halls. For those who have watched Stargate SG-1, it's a little bit like Mount Cheyenne, like the tunnels. And yeah, absolutely. You know exactly what I'm talking
That is
about.
exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. 100%. One of my many pandemic binges was SG-1, firmly rooted in my brain. So these concrete tunnels, support struck girders, we see, like, military-like security officers moving around the tunnels, researchers in lab coats, analysts walking on the clipboards discussing one another, and coming around the corner, we see Dallas Bartmoss with a little entourage of other Prism lackeys. What is Dallas doing with these people right now?
I want the scientists and lab technicians to stop referring to it as an Einstein-Rosen bridge. Einstein-Rosen bridge is from Stargate SG-1. This is a completely different thing, okay? This is a Bartmoss bridge, okay? We've got to get the terminology under wraps, okay? Also, we're not using black hole, wormhole technology, all that fake sci-fi stuff, all right? What we are doing is merely using diamond cutters to shear off sides of these different portals and using that material to find a jump point. It's more like a landing pad, a diving board, so to speak, okay?
One of the researchers who's actually been a naysayer to even the others of being like, as I've said for the 100th time, Mix Bartmoss, I am firmly of the opinion, unlike the rest of my colleagues, that this does not count as even an Einstein-Rosen bridge. It's not a wormhole. It's not a gate. That is a matter. He's like turning to like, that is a matter of space-time, points in space-time. We are dealing with disparate dimensions. This is neither a wormhole. This is not a, frankly, I don't know what to call it, sir. Sure, the diving board, if you will, has stuck with some of the other people here in the facility, but we still aren't 100% certain what it does. And we see that the group have exited a tunnel and are now entering like a larger cavernous space. We're against the far wall. Against the nearest wall as they enter, we see computers and lab stations, monitors, a lot of people standing around with a bunch of heavy looking equipment. And then on the far side of the chamber is a conglomeration of cabling and support girders and wires that have all been mounted and constructed to this large chunk of rock. And we realize this is something we have seen before. This is the carving of the archway from the fallen photographer that has been cut out of the cliffside that it was first found and brought to this prism facility, wired up and cabled and being analyzed. And there is a faint, that faint green glow is still coming through the crack a little bit in its center as you walk in the room. Continue your scene for a bit, Dallas.
I was speaking to Chief Rozecki last night. We have a flashback because part of my move that I took with Chief Rozecki is I have to describe what living with Chief Rozecki is like. So typically Chief Rozecki's daily routine is waking up at 4 a.m. in the morning, doing very loud calisthenics and other type of like high intensity workouts and everything very loudly, then making a smoothie very loudly with a blender. Just constant noises coming from this military man. It is wild how he is so quiet during his daily work life, but when he comes home, it's like he just bottles up all of the noise and just lets it out when he's not working. But we see like a flash of that. We come back to Dallas. Dallas says, what I want to see if we can develop, and I have some people in R&D working on this, but if we can formulate some kind of what I like to call escrow of our personnel, people that move through this portal, what we can do is somehow find a way to clone them. So we are finding an ethical way to send them over to this other point where it is still them working within that point, but their original bodies are here, kept under ice, so that if anything happens to them on the other side, we are able to hold on to them. They are no loss of life. We don't have to send people with a folded up flag and a letter saying thank you for your son's or daughter's service, but they perished in some jungle in Uruguay. Yes.
Mix Bartmoss, are you just describing us the plot of Avatar?
No, I am not describing to you the plot of Avatar, because do you see any 8-foot-tall blue people that fuck with their ponytails?
No, Mix Bartmoss. No, I do not.
I'm not talking about science fiction. I'm talking about actual applicable science. What we are doing is taking... We're hitting Control-C, Control-V on a human person. It's completely different from Avatar. You know what? You're smart people. You were able to figure these things out. That is why you work for this corporation. That is why you work for this agency. I'm going to let you do your smart people things, and I have something very important to attend to. And Dallas is going to turn and walk to their office, which is not overseeing all of this stuff. It is a small room in the corner of this room that just has a small window that views, and it's a bullet, it's a bulletproof glass window that views directly into that little green glow. So there is a green glow that goes into this office. And Dallas sits and just sits at his at their desk and just stares at the Odyssey camera that's just in the corner of the room.
And I think since last session, I'm going to clarify, the Odyssey lens. I think it's not the whole camera. It's the lens of that studio camera.
It's just sitting right there in the middle of the desk and just staring at it, never touching it. Puts on some white gloves, then picks it up and looks at the etchings in the side.
Actually, that's a great thing. Let's paint the scene, everybody. What are some of the odd markings or otherwise strange features on this, 70s style studio camera lens that make it stand out?
I think this is something that the audience would have seen earlier, of just this sort of like each little symbol that's been drawn onto like the outer rim of the lens kind of matches the pattern of the holes that Mike is digging out in his yard.
I think that there is something that is looks like a representation of fire.
I want to say there's some bands of different metal, different colored metal that have been worked around. So it's not just one uniform. I don't know what kind of metal, aluminum or steel, but there's bands of different colored metal.
When you look directly into the lens, instead of just seeing that blackness that's covered by a single like glass lens, it almost looks like you're looking through the night sky through like a paper towel roll or something when you look into it. I'm gonna set it down, hit a button for a calm. Clarence?
Boop.
Yes. Can we get a car ready? I need to go speak with somebody.
Right on it, Mixbot Moss. I'll get you a car.
Is going to get a like one of those plastic clipboards that also holds documents inside of it, heavy duty. Is going to take some of the photos and is going to take the Mike Hester's Waitley file folder and put it into it and close it and get ready to go. Let's go talk to Mike. Let's go talk to Mike.
All right, good. We cut away. Daniel, could you tell us what Ellis's next steps are after declaring that he would see what he can do? What do we see Ellis doing to begin the first steps towards helping Hank McBride?
I think we see him at the Barnesfield campground, and he's around the office, and this is where we first saw the stairs. And he's around the camp office, and he's carrying some different things, and he keeps stopping and looking behind him, looking around, and he sees the garbage can. And it's still overflowing, and so he's like wanting to check out the garbage can, but he's trying to remember what he's supposed to do, and he has like a He has like a pretty large one of those metallic leaves from from the mountains of Urgus. So he's got this metal leaf, and he's like scratched like a message to it, and he's trying to remember like what he's supposed to do with it now that he's here, and he can't. He's a little disoriented, and he's also dragging a it looks like a walking stick from a distance, but it's some stuff that he took. I picked up the next advancement, which is the prey becomes the hunter. And so he's carrying this otherworldly spear. He's like dragging around and kind of using it as a walking stick, but it's like a weird arcane spear. And he's just he's trying to remember what are you supposed to do with this leaf.
You hear a voice butting up against the edges of your consciousness. This is a voice you are, I'd say, very familiar with. And I'll let you contextualize the extent of what your relationship to it might be. But it is the voice. It is his voice, I should say, that whispers in your ear every so often and says, "Survivor, you cannot help them."
He finds like a half-eaten sandwich, and he's eating it, and he hears the voice, and he kind of does like a really rapid fire, like flips the guy off or the voice off, and then he looks at the leaf, and he's trying to read it, and then he's thinking about going to the office here, mm-hmm. but he's afraid of Doris, the office manager.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Roderick, Mike, you get pages from David Umbargo that he needs you for something. Dallas, you'd probably get a text from David Umbargo, and David signs off his texts with it. You know, he's like an email every time. So you're already planning to go meet with Mike anyway, it seems like. You're being summoned to the headquarters. And I'll give it to you in brief that, strangely enough, there is a matter of some... Well, it's complicated, but, you know, you see David seems like, well, I'm going to... This is bizarre, but the police want to speak with the... well, he points to Mike and Roderick and says, "You two specifically, but I figured Mr. Mix Bartmoss here would mind tagging along."
Can I ask why, David?
A man in their custody specifically requested to speak with you.
Shit.
A gentleman. Oh, well, that's funny. Paul Foster. Something funny, Mix Barbos?
I thought, well, Paul Foster, really?
Well, common name, but I guess it could be the same guy. The police
There's
didn't tell
no me way. There, David, this is not a large town. You
oh,
know
I
damn
know.
Well it's the same guy.
I know.
What'd he do?
Apparently he, Pine Sap, the little convenience store gas station off of the highway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe, the owner, Paul killed him.
What the hell?
Yep. I don't know all the facts. Just, confess to the murder. And in police custody, turned down a phone call, but instead of asking for a lawyer, he specifically demanded that, he wanted to see, the National
Yes.
Forest employees who rescued him.
I understand.
And Roderick looks at Mike and almost says, "What do you mean?" Catches his eyes and just nods. Looks back to David like, "All right. Let's go."
Any conversations on the car ride over?
I imagine there is, but Roderick gonna stay out of it.
Dallas makes it a point to sit in the back seat with Mike, almost pushing Roderick to the front seat. Mike, how have things been?
Things have been improving. I've gotten the back, most of my leg working again, as it were.
It's good to know. It's good to know. Things going well. Do they look like this? And Dallas is going to pull out a satellite image of Mike's backyard with all the holes dug in it and everything.
What I do in my free time is not... Why? Why are you taking photos of my backyard?
Normally, I'm not accustomed to voyeuristic pursuits like photo imaging, infrared shots of a grown man digging up holes in his backyard. After the first few, I was like, okay, it's exercise, or maybe he forgot something that's maybe wanted to find a time capsule from his youth or something. And then a pattern formed. I'm going to pull out a silver Sharpie and just start connecting the dots a little bit. Does that look like anything to you?
It looks like a bunch of squiggly lines.
Mike. And Roderick.
Am I really involved in this? This seems like a you two thing.
After the things that you've seen, I would say that you're more than enough involved in this. We know, Mike, I know, you know, hell, your ancestors know that's not just a series of squiggly lines. Ever since we started working, or I started working for the U.S. Forest Services and everything, there's been strange things going on. And each time we kind of rub our temples and just say, oh, we're just doing too much overtime, or, oh, things are just, you know, it's just stressful right now. The world outside has just gone to hell and everything like that. So it just must be our brains compensating. Mike, what's your real last name?
It's I wonder what role you play in all this. I don't think or know what role I play in this, but you're also involved, but not in the normal way, just being adjacent to me.
I'm just a cosmonaut viewing things from a porthole window, documenting.
Have you seen the studio? Have you seen it?
Some details. I'd like to see more. And I'd like to help you, Mike. It's no secret that ever since I stepped foot inside of that headquarters, you have hated me. You have detested the very ground that I stand upon. Every breath that comes out of my mouth, you think it is vitriolic and wasteful. But I have seen things that would make your toes curl. I know about multiple shooters in certain Texas cities during certain decades where an important person was removed from the playing field. I know about certain things that wander in the woods of the Pacific Northwest that have only been uttered by those that have seen it and few grainy photographs. I dream in numbers, and I live through a series of folders of details and reports that will never see the light of day. And I'm telling you this, Mike. You are important. You are a hinge that many things center upon. I want to help you, Mike. But I can only help you if you open up and talk to me. And Roderick, a medical professional.
What do you need medical help for? Right now, I am not a psychiatrist, and I sure as hell can't help you with what sounds like fucking Bigfoot. I'm not. Listen, I know this shit is not normal. I know things are weird, but I'm not an expert in it. It sounds like you two know some stuff that you have apparently been keeping to yourselves, studios, and I mean, it's so goddamn cryptic. Everybody is so goddamn cryptic. She continued.
Roderick, how did you score when you were doing autopsies and studies on cadavers in medical school?
I mean, I had to pass because if you don't, you cannot get the rest of your degree so quite well.
In your experience, have you ever seen something with four hearts inside one chest cavity, or maybe it has two tongues, or organs that you've never been able to document or seen before?
You know the answer to that, Dallas.
What if I told you there was an explanation for all of those things? What if I told you two that there is a way for you to make a difference today?
Roderick, you get a text message.
He's driving, but he does glance at it.
Like I think the alert says, Dallas is a CIA plant. So...
Just because I think it's like kind of girly pop and just kind of funny, I think Dallas's phone goes off at the same time. And Dallas just looks at it and goes, I don't work for any kind of alphabet soup agency.
Mike, why would you text them that?
I didn't text them that. They are stalking me. They're literally, they know everything I do. They were watching me. They were taking pictures of my backyard. They bugged my phone. Like, this is unhinged. I know I've been struggling, Roderick, but like this is what I've been dealing with for months now.
I'm not doing anything that any other company like Netflix or Google is already doing to you.
I don't think that, usually they know the person personally. Mm-hmm. Like, I know some shit's been Mike, this is... I'm not... Regardless of how you have been faring, Dallas, it does seem a bit, not cool to spy on people. Mm-hmm. Just saying, because I did hear you say you took pictures of his backyard, and that seems a bit not... good.
I'm not just taking pictures of Mike's backyard. And just pulls out the phone and hits play. And you hear a conversation between Roderick and the chicken. Just you hear the...
Oh my God. So actually, and the conversation is, he is talking about what Mike told him about seeing visions of the end of the world. And Roderick starts immediately talking over it. How the fuck did you get that?
You and Hank Jr. have quite a backlog of discussions.
What? Why did you... Did you plant a camera? Why would you do that? That's very... What do you mean you didn't?
This was all provided to me.
Source the CIA.
You know, Mike, that
please,
sounds...
Please. It's not CIA. You're not some crusty goat farmer in Saudi Arabia that we're spying on, hoping that we see something. You're not some drug pusher in France that sells, like, bootleg iPhones that might have some connections to some drug warlord in Uganda. Who? No.
Then who? That means nothing to me.
Michaels.
Cool. This is everybody's super normal.
I can't say, but I can show you later after you talk to Paul. I will merely just be observing.
You don't want to talk to Paul after all this? You don't want to see what the... Because clearly some shit's going on.
I need to talk to Paul.
Paul doesn't want to talk to me.
How do you know? You were technically... You did help.
I'm a writer, a hanger-on. I am a footnote in U2's service and investigation. So I will merely sit, observe, take notes. And then when this is done, I can take you to a location. But you will have to put a black bag over your head.
No. You are not kidnapping me. Dallas, listen, I like you a lot. And I think I thought you were a good person. I still think you're not a bad person. But I am not going to let you take me to some black site.
Bad people are needed to keep the other bad people from getting in.
Let's cut away for a moment as the car pulls up to the still heavily damaged a local police station burned out from the night of Verdigris a few months ago, since undergoing repairs, but it's still, you can know, there's a lot of tarp and a lot of scaffolding, and it's in rough shape. Cutting back over to Ellis for a moment, walk us through the rest of what you were planning to do with contacting the group.
We're at the headquarters of the White Mountain National Forest. And in the back, there's there's some woods, and Ellis is looking out of the woods, and he mutters to himself, "Sonia, let's look at all these eyes. So many eyes. We puts out the eyes." And he's got his rinky dink bow and arrow made out of sticks and twine. And we see him shooting at these little tiny cameras that are hidden around this chicken coop, this newly built chicken coop. And then he's like low crawling behind the chicken coop. And he peers around. He risks somebody seeing it, and he peers around, looks in the chicken coop, and says, "Chicken lives. Riley didn't eat that chicken. Chicken lives. There you go, chicken. You can't eat this. It's not edible. Don't eat this, chicken." And he takes this big metal, it's very thin, but it's like it's metal-shaped leaf that he scratched like a message in, and he slides it into the chicken coop. And then does like a unnecessary combat roll, and then scrambles back into the forest behind the headquarters.
Incredible. Paul Foster is just as disheveled as when you first saw him a year ago, lost in the woods, somehow more so, despite not being as clearly filthy, heavy bags under his eyes, thick stubble on his otherwise young face, prematurely aged by stress, and clearly a great burden of knowledge. He is cuffed in a little interrogation room, cuffed to the table. The police make it very clear to you two, Rod and Mike, that they're doing this as like a favor to the fact that like you guys are clearly like involved in something in like, and you guys helped the town like months ago. Like people don't talk about what happened on Christmas Eve, but people remember, and they're going to remember for a while, and that allows you certain privileges against procedure. So they leave Paul cuffed, but they otherwise allow you two to be in the room with no supervision, because they're just like this. They're basically clear, like washing their hands of this immediate like this conversation, but like they do hint that they don't want anything that's going to complicate their jobs further happening inside this room. So you know, just they're letting you have a chat in private. But yeah, Dallas, are you also going in the room, or are you staying out?
Yeah, I think Dallas is just gonna watch from the single pane, single way mirror observing. When we see Paul Foster, when we walk in that room, like Chief Rozecki is there, like constantly following Dallas. Dallas is gonna pull out $5 and hand it to Chief Rozecki to suggest that there was a bet whether or not this was actually Paul Foster. Rozecki was right.
I like that a lot. That's great. Mike and Roderick, take it away. What do you do when you enter the room?
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Roderick. Wow. Roddy. Yeah.
Damn, I didn't know you'd know my name. Hi,
You got me out of there alive. How could I forget?
It's just our jobs. Mm-hmm. But we heard you wanted to talk to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
He's like, he's sweating a little bit.
Did they tell you what I did?
They did.
Do you want to know why?
Yes.
It started after I got home in Albany. It didn't happen immediately at first, but it started. I started to see things that weren't there. I'd be shaving, looking in the mirror, and I'd see green rust covering everything. I'd see flashes of green lightning in the clear skies. I'd see a mountain cowering over the skyline of Albany that wasn't there. I started to see things. And then I started to dream. I started to have dreams, and the man I killed, he was one of them. The people who, I don't know, worship this forest, this place, this mountain, this... whatever it is, I still don't understand anything about it. I just know that what I experienced out there was just the tip of an iceberg that goes so deep below the ocean. It goes beyond being cold, and it just becomes dark. Just emptiness, just nothingness. And I started to see visions of not a man, a figure, tall antlers, a crown of dark antlers. Watching me, speaking in my head. And I knew something bad was about to happen, and I knew there were very bad people helping him here, so I knew the only way I could maybe start to get rid of these visions, of these dreams, and these voices was to do something about it. But as I got here, I panicked and I just... I killed the first one I found. Because at that point, I just gave up. I just needed to stop. I just needed to sleep. And I knew that you people were still here. And I think I just needed to get your attention in a very overdramatic way.
Well, you have it. That's for sure.
Something bad is happening.
Go ahead. He looks over at Mike just like as Paul Foster's talking.
Mike has just been nodding and like just been agreeing with him, just like, of course he has. I figured that this sort of thing would happen. That someone who has seen the mountain would break. This is a sign that the end game is in sight.
You have no idea how right you are. It's not in sight, it's here.
Paul, can you tell us what that means? What the end game is?
What's Dallas? Dallas is going to lean over to Raseki and say, by the end of this conversation, we need to make sure that he is put on a van and sent to our location. I'm sure the boss will want to speak to him more and we can help him sleep.
Paul Foster, in answering to you, says, it's here. It's coming. There is no time. We are out of time. There is nothing coming. It is here. He is coming. He is already going to put everything into motion. I don't know what it is, but I know it's here. It's coming. It's here.
Roderick puts a hand on Paul Foster's shoulder. He knows he's not supposed to get that close, but he doesn't really care at this point. And he puts a firm hand on his shoulder. He's like, I know you're trying to help, Paul. And I appreciate that you're trying to be one of the good guys. And I appreciate you calling us in. But I don't think this is your problem to deal with.
No, that's why I gave up. I knew that I needed you, and you. This was... I've seen you. And him,
pointing at Mike. I've seen you and I've seen others, and you are...
You can stop him. You can stop this. I don't know, but I think you can. I just want to sleep.
I know.
As this conversation continues, I think we'll cut away. I'm not even going to ask for a move from Dallas, because with a number of Prism things at your disposal, I think acquiring the acquisition of Paul Foster is an extremely easy thing to handle in the dark of the night and with a little bit of a bureaucratic oversight. All that aside...
I think we just see like a deputy moving Paul back to a cell and everything, and Chief Roseki is standing by the cell and then slips $100 to the deputy and then takes Paul, and Paul's confused, walks out the back door near the jail cells, and there's a van. The van doors open, there's a syringe in the neck pressed and then dumped into the van, and then Roseki closes the doors, slaps on the van, and then goes back around to the front to meet up with everybody else.
The three of you are leaving the police station when walking back through the parking lot.
So what do you think?
Dallas. I'm not sure if we're actually on the same side, because what you do, it haunts me. You want to observe the unknown. You wanted to have it in your hand, but you cannot have that. You mustn't have that. No one is meant to have that, unless they are trying to end the world.
Mike? I know exactly whose side I'm on. And I have a really good idea that it's the same side that Roderick is on. It was the same side that Hank was on.
And what side is that, Dallas?
The side that makes sure that people in this town and the rest of the world aren't torn limb from limb, like things on Christmas Eve do not happen again. But from the weird freaky deaky shit that I see going on in your household, Mike, the things that you look up online, the things that you're talking about, the things that you're saying just right now to me, shows me that maybe you're the one that wants to hold this. Your family has history. Your family are the ones that have been trying to harness these things.
Is that true, Mike?
I've looked it up because things have been hunting me. Things want to eat me. Things are obsessed with me. Yeah. I've developed a fear of stairs. I refuse to go up them unless I can confirm that they are part of the building's natural structure, because that's how they set their traps.
Well, luckily, where you're going and where I'm working, we are wheelchair accessible. Only ramps and elevators. Not a single stair in the entire compound.
Of course it's a compound. Of course it's a compound.
But I've looked up my family, the Waitleys. I've looked up how long that they live. And those that do not embrace their fate do not last long.
Dallas, you get a little notification on your phone that reports that there has been an issue with the surveillance on the station at the Forest Service station, that a bunch of cameras just suddenly went out in the backyard and they lost audio visual. And then around that time as well, Roderick, you get a page from David Umbargo just asking you if you finished closing up after you were done up there, and you kind of realized that you left some you kind of left the place in a haste and didn't finish doing wrapping up some stuff at there as well.
Ah, hell. We might need to stop by the station before we do whatever covert shit you're suggesting, Dallas, because I gotta close up.
It's okay. You go ahead and close up. And me and Mike here, as you see Chief Rezeki driving like a Ford Explorer all blacked out, pulling it around to the parking lot. Me and Mike here can go to an observation station where apparently audiovisuals cut out. And I think there might be some weird shit happening. And I think Mike would love to observe that.
Mike gives Roderick a hug. I might not see you again. I'm not sure.
Roderick is like, whoa, hey. And but like kind of hugs him back. He's like, Mike, I'm going to see you again. Because if Dallas tries to, I don't know, kill you or put you in some sort of weird hole, that would be wild. That would be wildly out of not only just character, but illegal. And we know that they're a better person than that.
Dallas has done several illegal things.
Haven't we all?
Everything that I have done has been within every single parameter and letter of every single law, international or domestic. I will have you know, I have a team of lawyers that will take you on that.
Okay, don't get into a fight.
Also, I would not be so banal to do anything that would harm either one of you.
See? I know you wouldn't, Dallas, and I don't think anybody's on any different side, because nobody wants the goddamn world to end, because we live in it. Mm-hmm. That would be ridiculous. And so you two play nice. And don't do anything too weird while I'm gone.
I think that's a little bit too late for that bit of advice.
Roderick, you go back to the NFS headquarters. Tend to your duties. Might as well check on Hank Jr. while you're here. Close up the coop. You go out there, checking on Hank. And hey, Hank is buddy. Hank you know.
Yeah.
He's pecking at something on the floor of his coop.
What do you got there, bud?
You see a little metallic shimmer of something amidst his floor. And you reach in and you pull out this metal leaf. Daniel, what did Ellis write on it?
I will copy and paste it into the chat, but I'll read it too. It says, Rowdy, spelled Rowdy.
Awesome.
Rowdy, your old dude Hank is locked up in the dungeon over here. He ain't dead yet, and he needs some help. The cowardly villagers do not, in all capital letters, want to help. Meet me at the White Stairs around back whenever, Ellis.
And let's take a break. All right, so I am formally introducing the mountain rescue, the first leg of it. As I've said, I'm handling it a little differently than expected. So the first of three questions on my astonishingly hard complexity total of 10 final scenario. The first question is, what is the Mountain King's plan and how does it involve Hank? Only a complexity 2. Once you answer that, it allows you to unlock the next question and you gain access to locations inside the mountains of Verdigris. You'll gain access to the Hidden Swamp Village, Ellis's home, and the Forest of Bronze. Now, another little mechanical thing I've decided. Some might say I'm going easy on you, but I just think of it as a fun way to include things from across the entire campaign. For my version of the mountain rescue, I am including a special rule at the start here that the first responders start the mountain rescue with a number of clues equal to the number of lingering phenomena that remain in the campaign. So there are 3 lingering phenomena that from the campaign, I believe, the lost camper, the missing child, and the crashed chopper. Those 3 clues, you may as a group take from the mountain clues gathered from the campaign. You may pick 3 of our 15 mountain clues that you will use to start the mountain rescue with. So I will allow you all to kind of deliberate which 3 mountain clues you'd like to start with. I know, take your time. There are 15 of them.
There are so many.
These 3 will kind of, you'll get them as freebies. Now you might be able to, you might use these right out of the gate to answer that very first question, but you might hold on to them. I don't know. Who knows? Yeah. I'll let y'all discuss and deliberate.
Like, I really think that's the clue of flashback of Hank McBride in a rescue mission gone bad could be really helpful for answering the first question.
Oh, absolutely. Like, how often do we get a Hank, like a rescue centric, like it's about him? Like, that's so good. Man, there's a lot.
I added it to your list.
Thank you.
Cross that out on the mountain clues. So we
fabulous. And like, Dallas is using the carved arch doorway with weird symbols around it and a green light peeking through the seams. Like, they're literally. That's the one you're using, right? Like, so I don't even know if that makes it better or not as useful. I don't know.
Up to you. I will not add that until you have unanimously decided.
It's a question of, like, do we want all these clues to go towards the Mountain King's, the first question?
Would you guys like to know all 3 questions that are going to be available to you throughout the course of this to help decide? No? Is that a no, Wes?
Wes, right? you're muted.
Yeah, right? I would say no, because
No.
I for one, welcome our newfound challenging thing of picking and choosing and everything.
Sure,
like
me too. I won't stop you.
I think it'd be more interesting if we did only use one, because there's 3 questions, yes?
Yeah.
If we essentially picked 1 per question, and since we don't know the other questions, it kind of helps shape part of it. It's almost like a Russian roulette.
I will say, though, I think the carved arch doorway with weird symbols around it and green light peeking through the seams is malleable enough for different types of questions that I think that we could utilize.
So do we want to add that one to the list?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
I'll do it.
What about the one on line 15 that has the guy's name, has the Ant King's name in it?
Oh, yeah, Karnonos.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense.
It's got the wood devils in it, too.
Yeah.
I was thinking that or the 20-foot tall spire of bronze. Either one, I think those
good,
fit,
yeah.
I don't fit know really is. Well. I think since we have the doorway with the monolithic, we have monolithic horror represented perfectly.
Yeah.
I think I'm good with the carving. But I'll let y'all deliberate because I got what I wanted.
I like the idea of having the Mountain King's name as a clue because it feels very integral to, I don't know, doing whatever we're going to do with him. What do you think, Chaotic?
Yeah.
Everyone.
In his motivations.
Yeah, in his motivations.
Yeah, that good sounds one. Good. Yeah.
All right. I will add it to the list. The carving that depicts the Mountain King and labeled him with Greek lettering as Karnonos.
Delightful. I love it. It's so weird. This is such a cool mechanic. Thank you, Alex.
No, yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm very happy you guys are liking it. All right. Those are your three mountain clues you get to bring with you into the mountain rescue. So it sounds like, just to be clear, you're going to not be answering this first question immediately. You're just going to maybe get a few more clues on this side of the world. Gotcha. Very good. Yeah. Then in that case, where did Dallas take Mike? To the monitoring station?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah.
Chief Rozeki driving.
Mm-hmm. He's taking me to a secondary location.
Yes, he is. What's going on once you get there?
I think we can hear that if you've played Alan Wake 2, the mm-hmm. monitoring station.
Yep.
In near the lake, you hear
so bah! Much of this final scenario is inspired by Alan Wake 2. Just so we're being clear here for a moment.
Perfect,
yeah.
Perfect. I love it. I'm in my element. But you hear that meh, meh, meh in the distance, and there's just like a red light flashing.
That's unpleasant.
I will note importantly, by the way, real quick, that because of this rule that you guys started the mystery with three clues already, that means from out of the gate, Ellis is able to interact with you guys whenever he sees fit, because the minimum threshold is three clues, and that has been met. So it's just reminding everybody of that factoid, of that little loophole you get. But yes, continue.
Eat shit, Rowdy. Oh, sorry.
So rude.
Nothing. I know.
Wes is feeling spicy today.
Yeah, Dallas is just going to step out and grab that clipboard that has like notepads on it, pull out a pen, and just start taking observation and notice and stuff. It's like,
well, what is that beeping?
That alarm?
Yes.
Yes, it's saying that the equipment is down. It's not working properly.
But there's electricity towards the place, so it should be working unless the cameras got eaten.
Someone purposely damaged them. Yes.
They got eaten.
Interesting enough, that frequency in the alarms, it's meant to keep small animals away, more like canine-esque, like if there's wolves about or something dangerous, it's supposed to draw them away, but drawing people near. I worked with some sound technicians to make it as glaring as possible. Please continue. Go ahead if you want to look around and everything. You're in your natural habitat, right?
I'm not an animal.
And just write something down.
Well, not any more than you are.
Writes another thing down, nodding in agreement, and writes another thing down.
And, like, Mike is just gonna walk on off, as probably Dallas is following me behind, and I'm just looking around to see, like, what could be causing this alarm, because, like, Dallas just gave me the vague notion of, like, oh, yeah, the systems are down.
Mm-hmm. You can go ahead and roll the search move plus your reason. I will tell you for free that the alarm is centered around the fact that several cameras that this station like gets the feed of just went down. Mm-hmm. And those cameras are labeled with numbers, but we, the viewers, know they belong to the NFS HQ where Ellis shot them with arrows earlier. We know there are some cameras down, but there's also these other like alarms of just like sensors picking up things. So you can go ahead, you get that for free. That's not a clue. Mm-hmm. That's just a factoid. All right, but you can go ahead and roll.
Okay. Let's go. What's that?
Reason.
Oh, okay. So that's a 5.
That's a 5. Okay. I'll come back to that in a moment. Roderick, you just read that leaf.
Yes, I did.
What are you doing?
I look around to make sure Ellis is not right here. Obviously, he's not. And I want to rush out there, like, instantly. But instead, I text Dallas and Mike, and it's like a group message because they need to listen if that's possible. And it just says found something very important, call me when you can. And this is wildly out of character. Roderick doesn't even text usually. He's one of those people. Like, he'll like do the dad thumbs up emoji instead of writing anything. Like, so that's the text you guys get if you're not, if you can still have like, if you still have signal where you're at, which I would have to assume Dallas would have signal in their special little camera place. But maybe not. I don't know. But you get that. But that's the text you get while you two are, I don't know, doing whatever you're doing.
Anybody want to come hang out in my special little camera place?
All right. And what is Ellis doing? Is still waiting out by the stairs? Or what was the... Yeah? Okay, cool. Just waiting out there. We'll get to you then.
Actually, maybe I could... with my move still trapped in Verdigris, mm-hmm. is there an active phenomenon right now? Would it be the Antler King?
It is active. It is basically the entirety of everything is happening. Yeah.
That I'm going to use that move to get you to reveal a clue about the Antler King. That Ellis would know.
Gotcha, for sure. Let me take a look at my list about the phenomenon. Good thing a lot of these are pulled right from unused mountain clues from your work. Some of them have been tweaked. Some of them are new. Let's see here. I have so many good ones. So about the Mountain King specifically. I have a question I'm going to ask you first, because I'm going to pull from your unique out of the woods prompts that we're not really getting to see too much of this campaign, regarding the Forest of Bronze, as you know it. There is a small, seemingly forgotten temple in a glade on the edge of the Forest of Bronze. What has Ellis hidden there in his time on the other side?
He's hidden a list of and this is on actual paper, I think, and so he's got it in something to keep it dry, and it's a list of like people that were important to him. There's other things on there like his parents' name, and but there's other things on there like John F. Kennedy and David Bowie. Like, there's other things that are listed. And it's things that he was trying to like remember or have like make note of.
In that temple, there is a ruined mural that clearly at one point depicted a great scene of multiple different figures and vistas, but now only three figures are still discernible on the ruined mural. One is a tall figure with a crown of antlers seated upon a bronze throne. There's a dark figure with a crown of brambles seated upon a blood red throne, and a hunched figure with a crown of seaweed seated upon a driftwood throne. I'll post that in the chat. That's the clue you get. You recall that from your time being trapped in Verdigris. Cutting back over to Mike with your five, I think I'll give you a softer reaction on this one. I don't think it would make sense to anything wildly crazy out of the gate here, but as you're looking around, we hear like a door close somewhere in the background, and your eyes are passing over equipment and like computers, papers, files. There's a vast amalgamation of like research equipment in this monitoring station, and muffled in the background, we the audience hear this because Mike is not paying attention. We hear a voice being like, "Is that him?" And a moment later, we hear the click of heels against the linoleum of the monitoring station floor. And you hear a voice behind you say, "Michael Whateley Hestes." And you turn around, and for the first time, Michael sees the director, this woman with coppery skin in a suit with a silver ankh medallion hanging from her around her neck. She says, "It has been a long time coming." Very cold, steely expression, but still a very keen intellect in her eyes. She's flanked by a couple of security guards, these, you know, men in black fatigues with you know, little sidearms on their pistol on their hip, pistols, kind of at parade rest, hands clasped behind their back, flanking her. And you kind of get this immediate air that you're not in danger, but you're clearly it's like when you have seen your fellow NSF employees, specifically those who deal with wild animals, have to be in the proximity of like an injured wild animal that they're helping with like the conservation efforts of, like, you know, it's like professional, under control, but that slight coiled inner like tenseness of like, we are in a cage with a wild animal. And there's that kind of that sense here that you are considered not in danger, but they consider you dangerous. And you have you can take the condition eye of the director.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
Like, I think Mike has like this sort of a little bit of a wild expression of like, who are these people? Like, is this more of like is this someone that Dallas has been working with? Like, he doesn't know who any of these folks are. You know me, but I'm a bit I don't know who you are.
I am the director of an organization that Mix Bartmos has recently joined as an agent of. I am what you could technically call their boss.
Not and, CIA, but close enough.
Oh, no. As close as an ant is to the boot that steps down upon it, sure.
Hmm.
We are something far more capable, connected, and important than the CIA. We investigate paranatural realities.
What? I will admit my brain is kind of a little bit scrambled.
Yeah.
Effectively, I think it's been in the microwave a little for a bit too long. Yeah. Don't want you poking or prodding.
She gives you a little mirthless smirk. Glances over at you, Dallas. And this is a part of the missed complication you rolled here. Aside from her arrival and her, you know, putting the stink on you, Mike, she says, "We have to move. We are needed at the central facility. There are situations currently underway."
Situations?
Yes.
Okay, situations. Anything that I should be privy to?
Perhaps we can tell you on the way. I would like to see Mr. Hester's here adequately overwatched during the transit. I don't want any funny business happening intentionally or otherwise. No offense, Michael, but your family has been quite problematic to the interests of, well, me and my own for many, many years.
I'm just going to shoot a glance to Mike. Of like a told you so.
And at that time, you get a ping, ping on both of your phones, a notification from Roderick that you see the text he sent you.
They've got Roddy.
What? the director goes, "What?
Roddy doesn't send text messages more than 5 characters long."
She leans over to like one of the security people with her and says, did we pick up Roderick Lops?" And the guy leans over and says, "No, ma'am. I believe he is
no. The para watching McCullough got Roddy." And Mike is just gonna leave.
After him, you get eyes on him, you know, and a couple of security people go out after, and she gives you, Dallas, a kind of like stern look
just holding my hands, and I'm like, I tried. I'm going to utilize my state of the art everything move as well, since we got a miss on this and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But at that moment, Chief Rezeki walks up and like nudges Dallas. And I would like to utilize the advanced drone. So with a variety of cameras and extended batteries that allow to be in operation for several hours, Keeper reveals 2 relevant clues from a drone's perspective.
You guys using all your moves to come after me and my difficultness, damn.
My last, my previous advancement was to give me all of my boxes of state-of-the-art everything. And so I had all 6 of them available. So yeah, we're going to be seeing a lot of this happen.
Fantastic. All right, you put that out there. I'll give those to you in a little bit.
But when I'm gonna look at it and say, "Very good, thank you, Rezeki," and I'm gonna look at her and I'm gonna say, "Well, after him," and start walking calmly towards where Mike ran off.
mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike, what are you doing?
Well, we did come in a car, and I think as I was leaving the room, I'm probably passed by Chief Rezeki. Would Chief Rezeki leave the keys in the ignition?
No, Rezeki, just because it's interesting, I think Rezeki keeps the keys, but there's a spare set of keys in the sun visor.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that whole thing of you slide in, probably close the door and lock it, and then scramble around, and then you open up the sun visor and they fall in your lap.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Just because I think it's interesting that you're getting chased and fucking Dallas is like, "Okay, well, let's go after him."
Yeah, so Mike is stealing the car to go to the Forest Service Station.
And just so I'm just to make sure I understand correctly, absolutely no one is calling Roderick as the text requested.
No.
Oh, I think Dallas will. I think Dallas will.
I was about to be like, that's fucking hilarious.
Mike is in his own car, Prism agents following behind in their own black
Go.
SUVs. And Mike just pedaled to the metal. It sounds like just driving to go save
Yeah.
his friend and coworker. And Dallas has the thought to call Roderick as the text
All of
instructed.
this dirt and gravel is swirling up around Dallas, and Rozeki's like, fucking car and everything. Like, they're like, had even pulled out a pistol to shoot the tires out, and Dallas was just like, pulled the pistol down and goes, let him get it out of his system. And then looks over at, there's like a buggy, like one of those, like, you know, Bearcats or whatever. They're like the four wheel, all terrain, like vehicles, like buggy vehicles, and just points at Drzecki and then hits dial for Roderick.
Roderick, after far long, too long of a wait, your phone begins to ring. Dallas is calling you.
He picks it up on literally like the first half of the first ring because he has been fucking pacing outside of this chicken coop. But, and with this, Jesus Christ, what were you two doing?
Well, Mike has met my boss, so that was nice.
You have a boss?
I know, I'm not too happy about it either. What's going on? Why did you send a Russian novel for a
What?
text message?
Because I didn't know what the hell you two were doing, but this is so. Hank is alive. Hank is alive. Ellis told me he left me this crazy note. But he is alive.
Ellis, that's the wild one, right?
Yes.
Okay, don't go anywhere. Mike is on his way to you, but Prism is on the way to Mike. Oh,
Who the
fuck, I
fuck is
said it out loud.
Prism?
I said it out loud. Ugh, god damn it. She's gonna have my ass for this.
Okay.
We're going to get to you though, and I'm gonna look at Rezeki and I'm like, do you know how to get to US Forest Services before the other two?
Yes, sir.
We'll be right there.
Does a
Jump phone call,
shocker.
jump phone call. Prank, prank, prank.
Another car.
Yeah. I think shortly after that phone call, like Mike, it registers with Mike. Oh, Roddy did ask for me to call, and then he received a second phone call.
He also picks it up on the first half of the first ring. Mike, are you on your way here?
Yes, I am on your way. On the way here, I found out the sort of not CIA, but kind of CIA-ish people.
Yeah, Dallas said something about having a boss in prisons. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Is that what they're called?
Fuck, I don't know, dude. Hank is alive.
Course, they don't want us dead. They're going to use us up for sacrifices. I'm on my
Jesus
way.
Christ, Mike. Oh, okay. Get your ass over here. I don't know.
How did you find this out? Are they taunting you? Are they
No.
about to capture you? I'm
No,
on
I'm
my
fine.
way.
I'm safe. I'm safe. Ellis left me a note on a leaf. I don't know.
Who's Ellis?
You know, the guy from the woods.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You have not told me their name before.
Oh, yeah, no, it's the guy in the one that helped us. Yeah,
Okay.
that's Ellis.
Yeah.
He's real cool, I swear.
To be fair, like my leg was called sorts of whack, so
You
like
had
I
other things going on. It's fine. But I'm
yeah.
safe. It's okay.
Okay, so
No one's
I'm
trying to sacrifice me.
okay. Well, then this is going to be a bit awkward because I'm currently in a ch road chase.
What? Who's chasing you?
Well, the Primzen, the maybe folks.
Why?
Well, I may have taken Chief Rozicki's car.
You stole a car?
Well, to be fair.
Michael!
The keys were already like inside the car, so it
That
wasn't
is
like.
still Grand Theft Auto!
I think now is the best time possible to call for the dangerous move from Mike, considering that you are high tearing up the roads, but also you did steal a car and then have prism agents in pursuit of you. What are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid that the police are going to get involved because, like, I did steal a car.
It's worse than that. You're going to run off the road and go tumbling down a cliff.
Oh, my
This will be plus composure for Mike. You'll have disadvantage from Eye of the Director because Prism is hot mm-hmm. on your fucking tail.
Okay. This is going to be a little bit weird.
I'm listening. I'm open.
I know, like, Dallas did make a call, like, out of character to, like, Chief Prozeki to find, like, routes that, to get there before, but I know this place. Like, I've been here a while. Like, I have hand-drawn maps of, like, that,
yes, you do.
That have things that don't exist. And I'm going to say, like, one of the things that don't exist is some shortcuts.
Yes, I love that. Mark the item, roll with flat plus composure.
Let's go. That is a six.
That's a six.
These dice are going to jail.
Yeah, they are. With a six, which is just a miss, I will say that you pull off of the main road. You begin to take a few secret trails that you know about. This car is not designed for off-roading, but you do take it a bit off-roading. I think you get about halfway there to your intended destination when you hit a dip on the trail. And the SUV hard bump goes off the trail and crashes into a ravine, crumpling the front bender. We do not have any crowns for the mountain rescue. It is only your own crowns, just so you know. But other than that, that's the only condition. It's just that your vehicle, no conditions from that. It's just that your car crashes, as I meant to say. That's the only complication.
So I don't die. Okay.
You do not die. You basically, because you rolled only a six, I'm going to say that you lose access to the vehicle that you were using and you crash. And you're kind of like stuck in the woods with I think you can even hear the distant of helicopters in the distance. As we can see that Prism has some helicopters that they're already have launched, not necessarily in pursuit of just you, but there's a lot of activity happening tonight. And we'd cut over to Dallas's advanced recon drone and get the two clues that Dallas will unlock here from that. As a lot of cars are moving through the roads at night with the headlights, we see the helicopters moving overhead, and this drone just surveying the surrounding White Mountain National Forest. Some of the clues I'm going to give you here. Let's see. Yeah. There is a pool of water, like a small pond that has a strange greenish, like silvery mist that's surrounding its banks. There's a soft glow coming from the water that the camera picks up, and nearby that, several crackling green arcs of electricity are webbing out between trees near that glade. And those are the two clues you get. You can add them to your list. In this case, Dallas and Rozeki arrive at the NFS headquarters before Mike does, since Mike crashed his car. Dallas, you come pulling up. Roderick, are you waiting out in the parking lot for people to arrive?
Yes. He's actually fully locked up what he was supposed to lock up. You know, Hank Jr.'s coupe he's put to bed. And he is fully waiting. He has he's holding, how big is this metal leaf? That, about that big? Yeah, Roderick's holding it. It looks weird. He's holding some weird metal thing.
Going to immediately step out as soon as, like, Rozeki is just coming to a stop, but Dallas goes, just, like, steps out, doesn't even close the door, and be like, what are you doing?
What do you mean, what am I doing?
Why are you handling that without gloves?
It was in the chicken coop. Hank Jr. was fucking pecking it. And Roderick's hands are like, he's like vibrating with adrenaline.
I'm going to look at Rozeki, and I assume Rozeki's just going to nod and move towards the chicken coop. Just...
Do not touch the chicken. He had nothing to do with it. Ellis left this here for me because he knows I'd be there. It's just look at it. And he doesn't hand it to Dallas, but he does turn it around for you to read.
Interesting. Okay. Rowdy?
I don't know. That's what
you
he calls
a pet
me.
Name?
I don't know why. I don't think our relationship is like that, but he apparently just kind of gave me a nickname. It doesn't matter. That's not the fucking point.
There's a lot of shit happening right now, Roderick.
What could be more important than this?
Going to be pulling up the photos of, like, the small pool of water that has silver green light, and going to be pulling up the crackling green arcs of electricity making web between trees and everything like that. Shit's going down. And I'm sure Mike should be here at any minute, but... Look, this Ellis character, how do you know you can trust him? How do you know he's even real and not a figment of our imaginations? I know that we've seen a lot of ridiculous things, and there's a lot of things that, like, I'm learning more and more, but there are still things that, like, minds can play tricks on us, that some wild man that speaks in some kind of 70s lingo is running through the trees and hiding in chicken coops and carrying metal leaves with him.
Okay, what, do you think I made this?
Well, you do have a proclivity for arts and crafts.
How dare you? How dare you accuse me of... I wouldn't... I'm going to go meet him by myself if you don't want to come with me.
No, you're not. I'm not going to have you go traipsing around in the woods with all this bullshit happening without me and Rozeki going along with you and making sure that this wild man doesn't use your ribs for tools or something.
Are you going to stop me?
And I think... there's a shift that you hear behind you, and you just kind of like look over your shoulder and you see Chief Rozeki doing the whole thing of like, when you see like, you know, soldiers or whatever, they have a firearm.
Yeah.
But it's a long rifle, but he's not holding it with a finger on the trigger. He's just carrying it. It's just sitting like almost swaddled in his arms, and he just stands and looks at you.
And Roderick meets his eyes and goes, oh, that's cute. That's real cute.
You can lead the way, Roderick. But I think we should wait for Mike, but Mike has a tail on him.
It's clearly from you or your buddies, so why don't you just pick him up like a normal person and get him over here? He apparently stole your car, so he should be here by now.
I would love to pick him up like a normal person, but unfortunately, there's nothing normal about Mike Waitley Nay Hesters.
I don't think there's anything normal about any of this, clearly.
Then lead the way, and you see Dallas pull out a pistol and then pull the slide back and have a little bit of trouble with it, but gets it and puts it back in the holster.
That's... you really need to learn gun safety. Okay.
And you traipse off into the woods. We cut back over to Mike for a quick moment before we have Ellis meet up with Dallas and Roddy and Chief Rozeki. You're alone in the dark woods after crashing the car. Going on foot, I assume, from here?
Yes. Because presumably, like, the car can't be pulled out by myself. It needs, like, a tow truck or something.
Let's paint the scene, everyone. How is the forest focusing all of its attention on Mike?
There is a green mist in the air.
I think we can see finches hopping along branches, almost like they're following alongside Mike.
Several trees turn after Mike walks by. Several trees twist and turn, and we can almost make out facial features in their bark as they turn and they like watch him.
And there is this faint wind following behind him, almost on his heels, pushing him and a little bit beside him, like it's guiding him somewhere.
So you're in the woods. Go ahead.
Yeah. I will note that we do have 6 clues at this point.
You do. And we'll get to that in a moment. But first, let's finish with you.
Okay.
Huffing it on foot through the dark woods. Are you hightailing it? Like you're like trying to like, you're like you're running?
Yes, because gotcha. Not only I'm being chased by like the Primson folks, I'm also being chased by the literal forest. They're trying to kidnap me, like they kidnapped Hank.
You are losing it, buddy. I'm gonna ask you, let's do the risky move plus vitality, just for sprinting through the forest in the dark of the night. You're on a trail, obviously, you know, some side roads. So it's not like you're like, you know, you're like hoofing it like on a raw hike through uncharted wilderness. And I'm not going to give you disadvantage for obsessed amount of eyes of the director. I honestly just think that like this is just indicative of you huffing, you know, going hard through the woods, trying to make haste. What are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid of just the force going to take me. Like,
fair enough. Go ahead and roll plus vitality.
Ooh, let's go. Okay. More cursed dice, but that's not bad. That's a 7.
Okay. Let's see here. I'm gonna tell you how your actions would leave you vulnerable, and I'll tell you, and then you can decide if you're gonna go through with it or not. You are going to make it to the station before the rest of Prism arrives. You'll arrive. You'll be able to meet up with Roderick and Dallas as they are already moving through the woods. You're kind of arriving from the back anyway, so you'll run into them as they're entering, because you were already almost there. But on the way there, you are going to encounter the Mountain King.
Okay. That's fine.
Okay. You're walking through the woods. It is misted, you feel watched, and the little wind that pushes you from back almost carries a voice along with it. You just hear that sibilant, wait.
Yes.
I'm looking around, there's no one there, but the voice still comes on the wind. You cannot save them.
I have to try, because if I do not save them, what am I living for?
You do not understand. You have no idea what you are meddling with.
It's not my fault. I didn't choose to meddle with this, but rather that you meddled with me first.
When you say you meddle with me first, when you turn around, jump scare of the king is right there and grabs you by the throat. This 8-foot tall, thin figure in strange robes of a somewhat it's a little bit like, you know, book Saruman, where it's like, it looks white, but it does have that kind of like iridescence when it catches the light, hefts you up in the air to bring you face to face with its featureless face or otherwise mask. It seems to be wearing those dark eyes beneath the crown of antlers looming, almost scraping at the woods around it, staring down at you. You have this sense looking at this figure that he's not really here, but is asserting his presence in a way that makes your brain hurt, the angles of the thought cutting against your skull. The place is so thin that he is able to reach through and touch you, even if he's not really here, and stares you down as you chose to mess with me. And he leans forward and he whispers,
I am the king of the hunt, lord of the mountain. I have hunted far more dangerous prey than your ilk. I banished the ancient wolf, great devourer of worlds. Old gods have trembled before me. You are nothing but a meddling insect beneath my heel.
And he squeezes against your throat ever so slightly. The dangerous move. What are you afraid of happening here?
I am going to get strangled and die.
It's worse than that. He is going to leave his mark upon you and let you wander free, putting your friends in danger. Do you wish to back down in some way?
No, I do not. I'm really curious about what that means.
Mm-hmm. Then you may roll. Plus sensitivity, disadvantage, because you're obsessed with the mountain.
Yeah, that's fair. That is actually a 7. Wow.
Fantastic. Okay. You will hold your own against this incursion of this entity's intimidating will upon you. I think we see that he has staring you deep into the pools of your eyes. The darkness visible in his inhuman slits are boring holes into your very soul. But you know, and he knows it, he's not here. And like the moon passing over, or sorry, like a cloud passing before the moon, this allowance of the veil with which he can exert his presence here passes, and he disappears, and you don't fall to the earth below. You were never really lifted into the air. He wasn't here, but you drop to your knees as the sense of pressure alleviates. And I'm going to give you a third condition, which is, I'll ask you, how are you feeling right now?
I feel even though that he was not really here, he was here, but instead, outside of me, he was inside of me.
I'm going to give you the condition prey. With an E.
Mm-hmm.
And I will note for our next future sessions as well, that unlike our other rescues in the campaign, the vulnerable move is available in perpetuity throughout this scenario. So as long as you have the ability to have a safe respite to have a vulnerable scene in, you can still do that to clear conditions and possibly find clues. As long as, again, I can't stress enough, as long as you're in a safe circumstance. But that said, after your encounter with the Mountain King, you hike it through the woods. You can hear those helicopters, distant shouts over echoing through the woods. Dallas and Roderick, you're leading out back. You hear heavy footfall, the snap of a branch. Rozeki trains his rifle with its mounted flashlight off in the tree line. Sprinting out of it is a very haggard and out of breath looking Mike.
Mike, I thought you were in a car.
I was. I had to ditch it.
Okay. Doesn't fucking matter. You're here. Okay, we're going. We're gone. And he actually knows where he's talking about, probably, if he's seen them. Have I seen the stairs that Ellis was talking about in the message? Or the place?
What do you think, Daniel?
I think they probably stand out because they're white. In the night, so I think they would probably stand out from the from any flashlight in the distance. Nice. You'd see them.
Nice.
Fabulous. And that is Roderick. Barely, after like everybody's there, he's not even talking, he's just going like leaf in hand, probably a flashlight. He's gone, he's going, and hoping you all follow.
Yeah, Vika is just puttering off. Just like panting, just like because he has more running to do.
Dallas is jogging alongside and just takes a glance over at Mike and says, "You done yet?"
What?
Get it all out of your system, and then maybe you'll realize that I can help you if you just stop. And then just gotta keep on moving.
Ellis, while you've been waiting, just I assume we cut to seeing you just sitting on the stairs, just like in your little orange tarp. How have you been occupying your time? What have you been doing while you've just been waiting out here?
He's got this partial skull of a deer. Every once in a while he'll look in it, and then he'll adjust the antler a little bit and look in it again, and then he's talking to himself, and he says, "I bet they know. I bet they know. They probably know. I'll ask them. They'll know. I'll ask them. They'll know."
Sure enough, after a long time of waiting, lights through the trees, the first responders and Chief Rezeki stumble out to this set of white stairs out in the woods out behind the MFS National Headquarters. And the White Mountain Hermit himself seated at the base of them, muttering to himself, waiting for you.
There you are. Sorry it took so long, Els. Had to get these yahoos.
Gonna pull out $5 and hand it to Rezeki.
Rezeki takes it and tucks it away.
Stairs.
It's fine, Mike. It's fine. We got
no.
An expert. Yes, it's fine.
No.
Ellis, I got your note. I got
Stairs.
Your notes.
Got a question. I got a question for you, Rowdy.
Anything.
Is Richard Nixon, is he still president?
No, thank God.
Whatever happened to that guy?
A lot. I'm pretty sure he fucked around and found out. Yeah, it was rough. I'll tell you later.
Hank's in trouble. Your old boy Hank, he's in trouble.
Yeah, see, I told you guys. How do we get to him?
Stairs.
No!
Gotta go up these stairs.
No!
Mike.
Close your eyes! Let's go!
Mike. Hank would do it for us, okay? And you know it.
I think we have to answer the question to go up the
yeah.
stairs, though.
I was about to say.
Yeah. Now we have to answer the question.
Let's go ahead.
I kind of got an idea just with two of them.
Well, let me tell you this. Let's take a 5-minute break. I'll step away. And then when we come back, I'd love to hear your theory. All right. So the question is, what is the Mountain King's plan and how does it involve Hank? You guys have a theory? I would love to hear it.
Let's see. So the flashback of Hank in a rescue mission gone bad. It was raining at night. Hank stumbled onto this white-robed, tall figure wearing a mask and bronze sickle. It was a cultist, but it was not a cultist to the Antler King. So using the rune mural with the number of figures, the three figures, there's like a civil war going on with these guys. And so the Antler King has already defeated the Bramble King, and the Wood Devils now serve, and the Wood Devils were minions of the Bramble King, but now they serve, the Antler King because he defeated the King of the Blood Red Throne. And so when the cultist that Hank ran into was actually a cultist for the third, the King of Driftwood, and he witnessed something there that he doesn't really either remember or didn't understand, but it's information for that the Antler King wants from Hank, and it has to do with that small pool of water which connects to the realm of the Driftwood King or the Seaweed guy. Is that it?
Yeah, and that he's wanting to use whatever information Hank has to take down his last, the last person that can, like, you know, contend with his power.
Interesting. Okay. So just to recap, so Hank McBride, okay, so there's this, like, god war going on. It's these kings, these entities are warring, and the cultists got that, and so the pool of water then with the silver green light is something to do with this with a different entity entirely. Okay, interesting. Gotcha. So he wants to use Hank because Hank knows something to like final nail in the plan to accomplish like some other kind of feat. Okay. I'm with it. I like that. I think that paints a pretty good picture for me to work with here. That's four clues used. So you'd get a +2 to the roll. Who would like to make the attempt?
Daniel.
I can do it, but because I'm playing the Vanished, they always roll with an advantage when it's in the I thought I'd try that one more time.
No, oh, I thought that. I believe
you.
I was going
to say, you don't have moves that do that.
No.
Let me go ahead. You always roll advantage. In the
+2. Six, 9, 10, 11. We got to have 11.
11.
We're in.
All right. You guys are in. You will unlock. You gain access to locations within the Mountains of Verdigris. Hidden Swamp Bells is home in the Forest of Bronze. Okay, yeah. So, pieces coming together, understanding a fragment of something that's at play here, a gamble in a fight between extra dimensional powers. I love that. And so we had you guys at the stairs and Ellis pointing that we had to go up the stairs. That's where we left off. So let's continue that scene, it sounds like.
I think it's a little bit of a struggle to get Mike onto the stairs. Like, he is crying, wailing the entire time. It's a pretty sad sight for a grown man to be doing this. But
Ellis leans next to you, and he probably smells bad. And he leans next to you, and he's like, be cool, man, be cool. Come on, be cool. We got to get up these stairs. Come on, we got to go help the honky-tonk dude.
I don't know which one I want to shoot more right now.
You're not shooting anyone, Dallas. Not yet. You can do that later. And he's just kind of like, he's also like helping push Mike up the stairs. Like, you know, like when a dog doesn't want to get in a car, like it's kind of that maneuver.
Come on, Mike. Come on, Mike. You get to the top of these stairs, I'll let you punch me in the face. Let's go, buddy. Come on.
See, look at that. That's great motivation.
Teamwork.
Going to die.
So you're going up the stairs. I have some interesting news to share with the playgroup. This is something that only Dallas, Mike, and Roderick have to worry about because the Vanish playbook is immune to it, I've decided, because that makes sense. Again, I cannot stress enough. This is nothing Daniel has written into the game. This is all my evil machinations of things I thought up of for our campaign's finale. Many of our rescues end with the rationalization move. Well, I have decided that there is a version of the rationalization move that needs to be made now for entering the Mountains of Verdigris. It is an alien dimension that is hard to comprehend. It is the place from which all the weird shit in your lives has been coming from. Entering this place is, by definition, a trial against your very mind and sense of logic and cohesion. So we are doing a kind of different version, a slightly tweaked version of the rationalization move. That it's not how you explain it away or anything. It is how literally your minds are rationalizing existing in an alien dimension, in a place that is not bound by your laws of reality or physics. I need and Daniel can participate as well, obviously, but this is just for Mike, Dallas, and Roderick, because Ellis is immune at this point. It is simply to come up with, tell me how you guys are able to keep your minds from slipping and getting lost in the edges of a fraying reality. I want to know how you are able to tether your brains to a rational existence in an irrational place.
Wormholes? Roderick saw a documentary once on space and quantum. It's not a wormhole. Seems it looks like a wormhole.
It does not look like a wormhole.
What does a wormhole look like, Roderick? Tell me.
A sphere.
It looks like a portal. It looks like a portal.
What does a portal look like? If you can tell me, I'll believe you.
Look at this. There you go. This is a portal. It's a portal. It's another dimension in like a quantum physics way. I saw Hayao Miyazaki talk about, not Hayao Miyazaki, fuck the, I'm forgetting an actual physicist's name. I saw a physicist talk about it. Maybe probably Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I think with Mike, he's already kind of halfway there in the third dimension, and this is why like his brain has been fried for the past like several weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, this is just the final step in the process of physically going into the mountain, because his mind is already there.
I was going to ask about Mike, like you were saying about like sort of being tethered to reality, Alex. Is he even tethered to reality anymore?
Technically,
I would say like his body is recombining with his mind. That's like how he is tethered.
You're muted, Daniel.
Oh, yeah. Poor bud. You've been muted.
I think with the other refugees and the people who survive over there, I think the way that they tether themselves is like their memories of reality become like their religion. Like where we saw Ella's hiding a list of things that was important to him. Maybe that where you just keep checking in. Who am I and where am I from? I think that's what the refugees basically do.
This is how Dallas is communicating now, only in hand gestures.
In a granola bar and being like, come on. I think Dallas is trying to disconnect themselves completely from like the caterwauling happening from Mike, which is like valid, very valid. Mike has been, you know, traumatized by stairs. Very valid. But Dallas is like, I'm not going to be able to do anything if I can't just make my way through. And so Mike is just focusing one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other. And I would like to use the last box on my flashback move that was so gratefully given to me by Hank McBride. Where we see a flashback of, we just look on Dallas's face and then it does a hard cut and we just see frost gathering on a beard and just ruddy cheeks and like the tip of a nose that's starting to turn black from frostbite, goggles, beanie, hoodie up and everything. And you just see Dallas is pulling a sled behind them, one foot in front of the other. And there is a sled carrying a person. This is the same expedition to Finland that we saw before, except now it is only two people. It is Dallas and this one person that they are carrying with them, dragging them. And then all of a sudden, Dallas stops and realizes that the place that they've been walking for so long, moving towards their goal of survival, of being found, has been on steps. Steps this entire time. That's why it has been so hard to pull this person behind them. And they look and they hit the step with their foot to make sure it's real. And they look behind them and they just see steps descending into a white, just frost. And they look ahead of them. And then they pull up the sled next to them. They cut the ties that's holding the person and they sling them over their shoulder and start stepping up the steps more and more, just focusing the breath, just pulling out of their mouth, pouring out of their mouth until finally you hear, "Who is that?"
Who is that? What's going on? And it takes a little bit for Dallas to realize that Dallas is not hearing somebody in English, but their brain is translating Finnish to English in real time almost. They've spent so much time around all these other Finnish people up in the mountains, they've started to develop to be able to understand it a little bit. And we see people start moving towards Dallas, and Dallas just collapses. And for the flashback move, I can describe how something eerie from a current threat of rescue was also present in the past, and I can expand the details and describe a mountain clue that you will add to the mountain clues. So would that count as our as a free little
because
clue?
We're in the finale, yes, I'll allow that. Okay. There are no mountain clues anymore. There's just clues, yeah.
Everything's a mountain.
Everything's a mountain.
If you guys roll like 12 pluses on search moves, I'm just gonna give you two clues. Like it's it'll you know, so it'll just be extra clue finding because you're in the fucking thick of it now. Awesome, that's great. All right, so it sounds like we have our answer for how y'all are tethering yourselves in an alien dimension. In a slight inversion, the person with the highest sensitivity, which is a three-way tie, either Wes chaotic or B can make the roll of 2d6 plus your sensitivity because you all three have a two. I'll tell you this now. I'll go ahead and tell you like what my slight inversion, like tweaking of this version of the rationalization move does. So on a 10 plus, you do it, you know, and like you are effectively you are unaffected by the transition to the mountains of verdigris. Nothing too bad happens. On a 7 to 9, same as above. However, the responder with the lowest reason, so in this case, Dallas, will begin to suffer from basically what it happens to Ellis, a disorientation from existing in a place that does not align with his brain. On a miss, you still all go there. But everyone gets split up in the transition. Everyone arrives at different locations in the mountains of verdigris, and you'll all take a condition from suffering from the transit. So
I think Dallas should roll because they would suffer on a slight miss.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's and because of the whole prism thing, I feel like this is a West roll. All right, personally.
So 2d6. Go ahead, Chaotic.
As well as mechanically, when there's a tie in sensitivity, we go to reason next. Yep. So yep. Dallas has the lowest reason.
Yep.
It's a perfect inversion.
Yes, it is. So go for it.
It's going to be like in Mario, where Luigi goes over here and Mario goes to the good Mushroom Kingdom.
That is a 2 mm-hmm. and a 5, equating to a 7.
Fantastic.
Gave all me right. a spook.
What'd you roll on the dice?
Did you get that a stat?
Oh.
Yeah, plus two.
Oh.
So 9.
9, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So 9. Yeah, but nine. Same roll, but yeah. All right. So then in that case, indeed. And honestly, what a fitting character to be the most affected by an alien dimension is the one who works the most in numbers and thought and planning and indeed the hubris of it all. I will ask you, Wes, to what does it feel like for Dallas? Like, what is how does this affect him? This is his... For all of their, you know, speaking in grand ideals and delusions of grandeur and, you know, confidence in the face of extra dimensional strangeness, how does that all just like break down? And like, how does it affect their mind to exist in this place?
I think what we see is Dallas trudging up these steps one by one and carrying all these things. And we see all of this other things, these distractions, these other people just fade away to nothingness. And it's just one foot in front of the other. And Dallas is notating all, it's almost like just Dallas, like a video game character stuck in a walking pose, or you're like trying to design a video game character and their walk animation and just walking in place for a little bit. And then Dallas starts trying to like work through different formulas or things of that matter. And then we see it's almost like the boat from Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. We start seeing like swirls of math formulae and things like colors and difference. And like these colors, they smell like daffodils, and there's like this dew taste in the air. And Dallas is trying to process. And every time Dallas tries to shut something out that's distracting them, something else comes in and starts creeping in and everything. And we see Dallas starting to break. Their eyes start watering. Their brow furrows. His teeth are clenched. And if I can, mm-hmm. I would like to put on a crown of the forest.
I'm listening.
And there's a snap. And we see a few weeks ago, after the night of Verdigris, after everything that happened, after losing Hank, and we see Dallas sitting in this large living space with all these windows around, and there's like this soft lighting, and Dallas has a tablet that's open looking over these numbers and is thinking about this Prism offer. And Dallas stands up and sighs, stretches, and just starts mumbling, "Stupid, stupid, stupid." Goes over to their office. There's no like, there's a very open space. There's not like really walls in this house. And like just wrenches open a drawer and pulls out a recorder, an old tape recorder, and goes back to the couch and sets it next to the tablet and just hits play. And you hear this older voice. "Now, Dallas, every time you start to think that there is more to you, that you leave a footprint behind that giants will notice, remember that you are nothing. You were nothing before you came, and you will be nothing when you die, and there will be nothing left behind. Repeat that." "Dad, I don't want to repeat it. I'm nothing. I was nothing before, and I'll be nothing afterwards." And I think we see here that echoing in Dallas's brain, and then they're taking one foot in front of the other, and they're just mumbling to themselves. "I was nothing before, I'll be nothing afterwards. I was nothing before, I'll be nothing afterwards." And then all of those colors and smells and flavors just start melting away. And then it's just that walking animation again, one foot in front of the other. And we just hear Dallas just chanting like a mantra, "I was nothing before, I'll be nothing after. I was nothing before, I'm nothing after."
So you will bump up the roll.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Avoiding your complications. Very good. The transition passes. You all disappear. A small army of soldiers come out of the woods, their lights and rifles trained on the stairs, and the director comes walking up. And a security officer next to her goes, "Ma'am, they've made the transition. Do we pursue after them?" And the director is just staring at the stairs, and she says, "No, not here at least. We need to go back to headquarters. We need to plan our next move. Either they're going to do something very stupid and be successful, or things are about to get a whole lot worse." "Very well, ma'am." And they begin to turn back, and she goes onto a headset and calls somebody, an employee back at the facility, and she says, "It's me.
Begin preparations. We might be facing a DeGoya class reality cohesion cascade. And she takes off into the night. Stepping between worlds. The group emerges in Ellis's home. Which is to say, a very ancient-looking tunnel system. Numerous chambers and corridors in a perpetual darkness. It's like fumbling around in a badly lit space. I'll ask you, Daniel, do you have an idea for where specifically these stairs emerge from in your home? Is it the Tomb of Mirrors or is it somewhere else?
Yeah, I guess it has to be it's the Tomb of Mirrors.
All right, then, yeah.
Yeah, we've seen that. It's the it's where there's all these casket stone sarcophagi that are all lined up. Some of them are broken open, and there's at the base of each one of them are these big black mirrors, and we're walking out of one of those mirrors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can look behind you and just see your reflection in a dark mirror surrounded by sarcophagus. There's a tall, tarnished bronze statue of a faceless figure with a crown of antlers against the far wall at the back. These other sarcophagi, if you have been broken open. Welcome to the Mountains of Verdigris.
Oh, shit. I want to make a note that Roderick looks around as everyone has stepped out, because he's kind of leading up the back because he's been pushing Mike. And as soon as he steps in and the last person and he looks back, I'm going to unmark Marked by the Chicken, because Roderick doesn't think he's ever going to come back. He thinks they're going to get stuck here trying to save Hank.
I will allow that.
Ellis is different here because he is not disoriented or confused.
Clear that condition.
No, so that condition is go only when I'm in.
Yeah,
in...
so you can remove it from your list, I believe, right?
Yep. And so he's got a light, and he pulls out a blue light, and he's like, "Hey, I'm Ellis. I'm Ellis Fogarty."
Hi. You already know my name, apparently. I guess it's...
Rowdy. I think is what.
Roderick, but that's real close.
It's hard to get reception on these mirrors. We got to get out of here. We got to go. I'm afraid your friend Hanks is in trouble. He's captured and he's imprisoned. Mm-hmm. But also it's weird here.
Yeah.
Cuz I think I've only been here a couple weeks. But I've only eaten like twice, and the whole time I've been here, I've not taken a dump, I don't think. So it's okay. Just time is weird.
Yeah, because Richard Nixon hasn't been president for a long time, buddy. Like a long time.
So you're not a hippie?
No, man, I worked for the Forest Service. Or I did.
Holy shit.
Holy shit.
Let's, Let's get out of here. We can get out to the light.
As he says that, go ahead, Kadok.
Yeah. Ellis, it's definitely been a long time because, like, I have not met you before, and I've been working for the Forestry Service for over 15 years now. Like,
oh, this is back in the 70s, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1972. And now he's going through this broken door and up these stairs that are slightly askew. And there's these hallways. You can't see the end to either.
Indeed. I have a paint the scene question for Ellis's home away from home here that I'll direct to the group. These tunnels were carved and eventually forgotten by the others. Describe a chamber somewhere in the darkness. What features hint at its purpose or otherwise make it impossible to grasp?
There's one he stays away from. It's made completely out of stairs, like an Escher painting. The stairs just go all different kinds of ways, but there's all these very disconcerting, like open maw mouths, not human mouths, but animal mouths that these stairs lead into, and he's never gone in there.
Oh man!
there's a room of chutes and tubes that if you stuck your hand into one of them, it would probably come out of another one in a different part, and you could pull a lever. There seems to be different like levers and things like that. Like it was like a some kind of delivery room.
There is a room filled with fluff, like bits of like sort of pillows, stuffing and whatnot. It's a very comfortable place. I think Ellis has set up like his bedroom, quote unquote, there. However, for some reason, like there's not really any blankets. Like anything that Ellis manages to make as a blanket just gets turned into fluff at some point. So he can't stay there for too long, or else like bits of him may become fluff.
Oh my god. I think that there is a room, the door usually stays closed, and it is a pulse, but you can hear this wet pulsating, and if you were to open it, there is just, it's like the inside of a mouth, like it is all wet flesh.
As Ellis is leading you up these stairs out of these massive, you know, cracked open doors from this tomb of black mirrors, leading you through these passages, you know, lighting against the darkness. Mike, Dallas, Roderick, you hear a strange sound coming from up ahead. It sounds inhuman, slightly creature-like, and a wet kind of slapping sound. And coming out of the darkness, you see a 3-foot-tall bipedal frogman who just shimmies out of the darkness and just goes,
"That's Greeley. Greeley, these are those guys we watch on the mirrors sometimes.
Me and Rozeki just pull up.
Yeah, guns trained on it. Yeah.
You know Roddy. And this is Mike, and that's Dallas and
Greeley.
I don't think you guys should point guns at this little dude. He seems pretty.
He's like the last of his once noble tribe of folk. There, he's the last one. It's a tragic. He's got a tragic story. But I don't have a lot of friends here, and I count Greeley is one of them. Isn't that right, Greeley?
Roderick, like offers, like kind of like crouches just enough to offer his hand to this frog man. Like, do you do handshakes?
He might see that as threatening.
Oh, sorry.
Different cultures, different traditions.
Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry, bud.
He like it like has like this kind of like tensed up like a prey instinct kind of like stands for a moment, but it eases, like looks up at you. And it doesn't, you know, hold up its hand for a handshake like you were. It holds its, like, both of its palms, like, flat forward up in front of it. And does that. And it tilts its head back.
Roderick does it back very
A tongue
carefully.
Shoots out of its mouth and, like, slaps up against your forehead. And leaving, like, a trail of, like, little dripping mucus that, like, kinda goes on your face. The tongue snaps back into his mouth and he lowers his hand and nods at you.
I can't do that back. I'm sorry. I don't.
Yeah, you don't have to. He knows.
Okay,
he knows
good.
Our
okay, he knows our human limitations. Jesus Christ, Ellis.
So what I'm hoping we can help Hank out, and put an end to this the deerhead guy. And but there's a village of refugees real close to here, and I don't know if they can help us or not. They are by far a cowardly lot, and
remember that from the note.
They're not to be, we can't rely on these guys too much. But if we can get some of their help, that'll be great.
So we're going to go fight some sort of deer king.
Well, we're going to try to get Hank out of there. The deer king wants, he wants Hank for something because he's keeping him in a place where they put political prisoners.
Yeah.
Hank's a political. I can't believe he's alive. That's just...
Well, I mean, he's not living his best life. I'll tell you that right now.
Ellis, we thought he was dead. We had a funeral and everything.
Well, it might not have been for nothing if we can't We can't swing this.
I hope it was.
Did you bring the dynamite as I requested in the note?
It wasn't in the note, my friend. I don't think I... Dallas, do you have that? Do you have dynamite? That seems like a thing you would carry.
I'm going to mark state-of-the-art everything as we look over at Rozeki. And Rozeki pulls out a duffel bag and sets it down, opens it up, and you can see various firearms. And then I will give a sticks of dynamite to Ellis. I will give tear gas canisters to Roderick. Okay. I will give a tripwire landmine to Mike, and I will take flashbang grenades.
Very nice.
And you also have a gun, essentially, that lasts for...
Oh, yeah, like the Knight of Verdigris. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Once this rescue is finished, you have to remove the gun from your... Yeah.
Yeah. If this is just, like, my third gun...
I don't know how well these guns work on some of these things. Like, sometimes the weird stuff, like a stick, will hurt them. But I'm very interested to see what explosions do. Because the physics of it's just wild out here. It's just wild.
Yeah. You're going to see Dallas has a crossbow and pulls it back, and you see the bolt in it has a bronze arrow tip from like those bronze darts from the hunt, and just goes, "I've got one. We'll see."
That's better than nothing. Dallas, how much do you know about this shit? It really seems like you know way too much, and it feels like we should probably...
Research and development, my friend. Research and development. You see something on the ground that you're like, wow, that's strange. That looks like a clue. I see it as a potential forward in technological advancements.
All right.
Okay. You know what? Good, well, good, good. That's good here. We're in a different dimension with a frog guy. It doesn't fucking matter. Hi, Greeley. Yeah, that's cool. It's fine. It doesn't matter anymore. We just got to get back and get out of here.
Greeley,
he's a fierce warrior. He's a fierce warrior. Don't let his small size fool you. I've seen him in action.
Oh, don't worry. I've played Chrono Trigger. I know.
So as the group is kitted out and acclimating to their new environment, the next question that has been unlocked that you guys have access to for the mountain rescue is, how can the Fortress of Verdigris be breached? That's complexity 4. We'll explore more of what that means, but that is to say, if you answer that, you will then be able to gain access to 3 new locations: the Undercroft, the Inner Halls, and the Throne Room. And then you'll unlock the third and final question of the mountain rescue once you have breached the fortress.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Since I do have a move called Never Seen Anything Like This Before, could I add Greeley as a clue to this mystery?
I kind of love that.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm going to write it as Greeley is a expert warrior.
Oh my god, that's so good.
That's really good. So good. All right, add to the list. Let's go to end of session questions and then into Stars and Wishes, and that will be our first journey into the finale of our campaign. Roderick, did you resolve rescue? No, you're in the middle of that. Did you talk about one of your many certifications this session? Did you share your career goals this session?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. And there are no echoes in time, unsolved, so known for you. Mike, did you impress the others with your wilderness skills?
Did I impress anyone?
You got...
After the crash.
Yeah, you got
the crash,
there.
You got there after the crash, yeah.
I would say that counts.
You knew the trails real well, yeah.
Yeah,
they're on foot.
All right, did you share your insight with the White Mountain about the White Mountain National Forest?
Most of it was unhinged. So,
it was,
like,
I mean, I'll say yes, because it was kind of apocalyptic, but all of it was technically true.
I was like, did all the knowledge count as White National Forest knowledge? Because if so, you shared a lot. You
shared a lot. Yeah. It counts, technically.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
Great. That's 2 for you. Dallas, did you explain it again why you love volunteering?
No, I think I explained why I love money.
Yeah.
Or so and everything.
Speaking
like
of, did you flaunt your wealth?
Absolutely, multiple times, as much as I can.
Yeah.
Here's a bag of guns. Here's Chief Rozeki being able to grab these things. Here, have you seen that I've developed an entire portal way? Like,
yes, indeed. All right, take a point from that. And then for Ellis, did you primarily speak gibberish? Yes, you did for most of the session until they got to the other side. And did you learn about real happenings in the real world? Yes, you did. Yes, you
Richard
did.
Nixon is no longer president.
Yeah. Good for you. All right, gang.
Far out, man.
Let's do stars and wishes. And then we will put a cap on it. Whoever wants to go first, take it away.
I love Mike fighting for his life perpetually this entire session. Oh no, it's really bad. Like we're getting not quite Ellis level, but pretty dang close of just like how much has he lost it. So like that's been fun. I love stealing the car. I love being sort of kind of tormented with the Michael. That was just okay. Also Dallas revealing like, oh yeah, I've not only been spying on Mike, I've been also spying on you, Roderick. So that's been fun. And oh man, Ellis is always fun of like, oh yeah. And I just love like how he went from like this sort of weirdo who's just like, oh yes, come follow me and don't worry about that dude, to like a reasonable forest service worker, like the dimensional shift. I don't know what's going on with that, and I would love to explore that. And Rodri, you're doing your goddamn best, and you're keeping this group together from killing each other.
I've got some. I really like the opening with Chaotic's opening of Mike digging up his backyard. It was very like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where he's making all these mashed potato dioramas, and Chaotic's reaction to the director, and the whole scene with Alex and Chaotic with the director and Mike. Alex, I really a star for bringing in both Paul Foster and the Archway from the Fallen Photographer. Those are great callbacks, and I also like how the director treated Mike like he could like a cornered animal. Like that was some really good imagery. And I got a star for B for I like that you including the chicken coop because that allowed me to like I could play off of that. And some quotes I like when the director is introduced and Mike is telling Roddy and then Dallas has a boss. And in the conversation, this seems like a you thing. Those are all great Roddy one-liners. And with Wes, I like Dallas is trying to come up with an ethical way to clone people to exploit their labor. That was awesome. And I'm not the keep saying it's not science fiction, guys. That kept coming up. I like that. But I'm just cosmonaut. And I really like you facilitating Mike's escape. That was awesome. And Russian novel text message.
Start from with five words. It's a Russian novel text message. I'll go. Stars, Daniel, Ellis, every single time. Is Richard Nixon still president? Took me out. Because it's just like, it's like such a thing. What? No. What's going on with that guy? It's just fantastic. And it's like, I don't think anybody even back then knew. We still don't know what was going on with that guy. What was going on in that little head of his? Mike, Chaotic. I love how like Mike is just descended into this thing of like, I don't think you understand what I have seen and what I have experienced. I'm going to tell you meticulously how there are other worlds than these far beyond, and there are people hunting me and trying to eat me and everything like that. Just to anybody that will fucking listen, especially Paul Foster, like that scene with you and Paul Foster being like, birds of a feather, baby. You thought you had it bad? Imagine being me. It is so good. And then also like, immediately being like, we have to go get Roderick, and just running and like jumping in a car. Like, it's one of those things that like Dallas is like, it's so bold, I have to see how this turns out, and so yes, I'm going to try to like distract her a little bit to give you some time to see what happens. Such good, like, I like the dynamic between Dallas and Mike, where they don't like each other, but they kind of, there's this realization that they need each other, and so that's going to be like, it just, it carries their relationship all the way through. I also want to give a star to B for a mouthy meat room. It's like the inside of a mouth. What the fuck, dude? Like I know you're on the Silt Verses and everything like that, but like, come the fuck on. Where did that come? I don't know. It's just like you have these little nuggets that you're just like, and by the way, I'm gonna drop this and see what happens. And then it's so cool to see. Also Roderick really like stepped up and was like, I'm getting shit done. We need to get shit done. I'm tired of all of your petty shit. Everybody's petty shit. Ellis is my new best friend. Fuck all y'all. Ellis is my new best friend. And then Greeley came up and was like, oh, what's up, Greeley? My new best friend, Greeley. And I just like how there's just like Roderick's home for imaginary friends, like it's just like Roderick's menagerie of fucked up friends that we're just gathering, where it's a chicken, it's a frog dude from Chrono Trigger, and it's Ellis, and it's just like, this is my ride or die crew. I don't care about anybody else. As long as they got me, everybody's got me, I'm good. It's so good. That's yeah, stars all around. Oh yeah, Alex also, by the way, just like coming up with this shit, rolling with it, letting it go. It's very cinematic. I've had you run games for me twice now, and I like you have an understanding of pacing and the cinematography of facilitating games that works really well and translates really well, so that we're never lost. I don't think I've been in a game with you where you're running it, like a session once, where anybody's been lost or confused as to what's, like, the focus, what's going on. And then my wish, I hope, like, when we finish this up, I hope we have, like, a wrap-up where we talk about, like, the game system itself. I would love to get, like, Daniel's thoughts on, like, how... I want to know exactly how you feel once this wraps up, of how it feels like have your game getting play tested and everything and seeing these changes and how it affects you from a game designer perspective. Because I feel like that's always super interesting. I think it'll really show the importance of stuff like this, like play testing systems like this, and then also play testing systems like this in such a public forum. That also takes a lot of star for also just letting us do this in such a public manner. It takes a lot of cojones to like have somebody take your game and be like, this is, we're going to run it and we're going to have notes and we're going to put it in front of the public and they're probably going to have notes on it. So I think it's really cool. As somebody that loves critique and review, and that has nothing to do with any conversations that we had earlier today. So, you know, that's me. I'm done. Turn my mic off.
Oh my God. Yeah. Friendship ended with Dallas and Mike. My new best friends are the White Mountain Hermit, a frog, and a chicken. But no, seriously, oh my God, guys, this was such, you're all so fabulous and so talented. Alex, I actually like have to note a very good line was the talking about the CIA and PRISM being as close as an ant is to the boot that steps on it. Oh my God, that's such a good line. That's such a good line. This entire thing, you've crafted this beautiful, like, very custom finale. It's fascinating. It's amazing. Thank you for giving us so much runway to do a lot of character work. I'm such a sucker for that. And it was just, I love your NPCs. I love your various creature work. You did get to do some creature work, and I love it. I love it. It's so good. Your Greeley voice really just delights me. And I just, I have to echo everything Wes said. It's so cinematic. It's so smooth. It's your keeper style is just absolutely delightful. And it is such a joy to be a player in your game. And Daniel, it is such a joy to play this system. This is literally one of my new favorite games. I love it so much. I have told everybody I know about it, because It is so fascinating. It is such a cool genre. The mechanics are delightful. And I am so delighted to get to play test it and see all of the stuff and know that if I played it again, it would be completely different. And I love Ellis. I love Ellis so much. I'm so excited to get to talk to him while he's coherent. That's going to be really fun. As much as I really also really love your gibberish, like I'm excited to like meet this character for real and actually get to like know him. I'm so excited. That's going to be really fun. Dallas is everything. It's like you've kept this sort of like conniving almost, but there's like it's fascinating how you've continued to work in your own, like, what you're trying to do, all of this, like, R&D into, like, creating another portal to another world. I love how constantly Dallas references media. That delights me to no end. Oh, my God. And I really, really loved getting to have this conversation with Dallas and Mike that was, like, 13 sessions coming and actually finally get that cinematic, that argument, and it was all there. We couldn't, like, we weren't going to cut away. Nothing was going to attack us because we're in a car. You have to. You're trapped in the back seat. It was so good. It was so good. And I'm so excited. And a star for the, like, I was nothing and I will be nothing thing, like the flashback with Dallas's dad. Jesus Christ, Wes. Jesus Christ. Oh my God. Okay. Huh? And like chaotic. I love Mike's negative character development. This descent into madness, these holes in his backyard. Saying that Dallas worked for the CIA absolutely took my ass out. Like that was so good. That was stealing the car. Amazing. Like I just love how whole hog Mike is in on this. Like he's here. He's ready to party. He's ready to, I guess, do whatever Whateleys do. I don't know what that means, and I'm very excited to see. I'm so excited to see how this campaign ends, how it wraps up, and I also want to get to talk about this system at length. So that's me.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I want to star has already been said. I mean, I particularly have enjoyed Ellis's tactic of approaching the group with the chicken coop and the letter and Rowdy. There's a lot to love about our vanished Mr. White Mountain Hermit. But I agree that like seeing him on the other side is like coherent and being like, hey, it's definitely been gone for a few weeks. That was fun. I was very much looking forward to having a bit between Dallas and Mike because I mean, we've had these like conversations have been boiling to the surface and getting to actually like linger in that for a bit. It was really fantastic. Chaotic, your constant frantic doomsaying, and Mike is clearly on a frayed rope at this point, really just slipping. And I felt like I really just enjoyed the way you've been embodying that with Mike, especially because it's all coming to a head with how it's been over the course of the last several sessions. I agree that, man, Roderick taking point and being like kind of the one who is like, I'm the military man here. I'm going to see us through. Like, we are going to do our job. Very funny to have it be like, we got a text from Roderick. He's been kidnapped. We got to go. And then not even calling him. And yeah, getting to see how Mike interacts. Mike steals a car. Getting to interact with the Prism director. A lot of fun. I'm really enjoying how you guys have approached this first leg of it. I really liked your theory to about like kind of like what's going on like on a broader scope with the plot in the mountains, because again we didn't explore too much of that as like from the keeper seat. So I've had some thoughts, so I'm putting them out there in the clue form, getting to hear you guys make a theory out of it. Very cool. There are a lot of like little mini references to other Brindleverse products in my presentation of this and the clues that I didn't want to make as like a hard, like, this is the lore that you guys must subscribe to, but the hints were there. And so it's always really cool to see how you guys like take something and run with it in your own, because you know it gets me out of my head of like so I you know allows me it makes it forces me to be flexible and incorporate your ideas into the tapestry as well, which is always a fun challenge. And I kind of like being handed the baton from you guys so I can run with it in a new direction and see where we go with it. So that's all great. I mean, yeah, wish wise, I'm excited to continue this finale, see how it goes. Again, I know it's against type and we're going to do something a bit like more difficult, a bit more multi-layered. Some of you might die. We don't know. We're going to find out. But this, I'm looking forward to you guys getting to explore the Mountains of Verdigris a lot. I feel like the locations I pulled from the Vanish Out of the Woods, phases stuff are going to be fun. Going to love some characters to interact with, we're going to get very weird and very cosmic. So I'm excited for that. And yeah, I just hope we get to see some vulnerable moves here in the Mountains of Verdigris so we can get some character interactions between each other before, I don't know, anything really kicks off and things become dangerous. But yeah, I don't know. So that's, I'm just looking forward to our next game. So yeah, any other stars or wishes before we wave to camera and sign off?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to deciding whether or not Mike is just going to continue to be weird here, or is he just going to reclaim some amount of like his focus? Because like it's a definite question whether or not Mike is a lot like Ellis or not. Like, has he been slowly like being brought into the mountains because like they're obsessed with him?
Love that.
So.
Oh, and one more star for Dallas's opening line being, it's not an Einstein-Rosen bridge.
yes, oh my God. That was so good. Really, everybody's opening scenes were so good, but that delight.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right, well, if there's nothing else, let's wave to the camera and say bye.
Bye.
Bye.